You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and we are listening to a piece of music called Dream. So let's take a few moments to get into that dream space, that place where our sense of self, where we find our own groove and rhythm. So just move and breathe with the music for just a few moments. Are you moving your body or tapping your hand, getting into the rhythm from which we will rise triumphantly ourselves? Are You Coming? Coming to the River by Diane Reeves. Welcome to all. You are listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. And on today's program, I hope to open the way for you to share your perspectives. But what I'm looking at is finding a balance, returning to equilibrium, being able to open up our vantage point and see things from the inside out, not just from the outside in. I have a recommendation from a doctor, actually, about bringing peace into the world, you know, working on bringing peace into the world. And I hope to do a collaboration very soon and be able to maybe think about how to put together some kind of inner peace project or some way for people to tap into that nourishing side of themselves so that they can heal whatever ails within themselves, but also creating environments in which we can be healing towards each other. And the impetus for this, of course, is the level of destruction taking place in the world right now. And you'll find places on all the continents where there are some conflicts going on. And there's a lot of political discussion we could get into over these issues. And all you have to do is listen to the radio station, and you're going to be getting updates all day long about what is happening in Palestine, Israel, what is happening in Ukraine, Russia, what is happening in Sudan, and what is happening. There are conflicts being instigated in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, and in the Americas. So while there is activism that needs to be done and rights that need to be fought for over again, like free speech, freedom of assembly, open and fair elections, these are problems that exist everywhere, as well as the prolific amount of media programming according to the prevailing agendas and narratives. So there's a way in which each of us would be impacted by this and are impacted by this, not only by out of compassion for people who are being harmed and out of a sense of righteousness that justice needs to prevail. In countries far away from where we are right now in the U.S., as well as here in the U.S. So there's a lot going on, and we have a tendency, certainly I do, to be engaged in this exchange of information, looking for alternative voices, which you find here on this radio station, you know. Voices you're not going to really hear in the mainstream at all. And I recently saw a chart on a website that is laying out an attack on the various independent journalists trying to convince the world that they're actually sympathizers of the enemies, whomever the assigned enemy might be at the time, or depending on the issue, you become an enemy if you question anything. All that being said, and as you can tell, it's difficult for me to step back from the level of chaos that we are engaging with in the world. But what I have discovered within myself, and I think it may be true for all of the warriors out there, those people who are dedicating themselves to the cause, whatever that might be, be it Free Palestine, be it end the war in Ukraine, be it stop the exploitation of African countries. Just like a normal human being has to replenish themselves with food and with water and with sleep and rest, we also have to replenish ourselves from the vantage point of our inner integrity and our inner soul space. And one of the ways that we can begin to look at that is to retreat for the moment, you know, for those moments you want to dedicate to restoration, retreat from the public domain and the media onslaught and the arguments between parties, positions, policies. Just separate from that for a few moments. And if you can, just like when we look onto our devices and we're seeing all these images and hearing all these words, understand that all those words, all that energy, all that conflict are not passive in the realm of energetics. They hold a vibrational force that when it enters into our field, into our thinking space, our feeling space, our physical space, through the incitement of emotions and thoughts. So it becomes a tangible, real thing. It's a force. And I believe that those of us in humanity who are steering ourselves towards personal integrity, social integrity, and political integrity have to create systems of letting go of these energies from our bodies and preventing, you know, putting a cap, learning to put a cap on the kind of personal rage we might feel or grief we might feel. And I don't mean from a cap from the perspective of ignoring it or suppressing it, but a cap in terms of recognizing and releasing it so that there's a limited amount of toxic energy vibration that we allow to our personal space. So it's not to deaden down, it's not to retreat from a compassionate response, and it's not even to get out there and battle, you know, on the picket lines or, you know, through social media, by whatever means we engage. It's to understand that that is world unto itself. And we need to maintain at the core of ourselves who we are on the inside. And by doing that, we need to establish certain, workable principles that we can begin to integrate into our evaluation and into our reactive responses. So it's a matter of building space between the impact of an information source or event and the reactive time, so that we can see something fully and honestly and not be triggered immediately into an adverse emotional state. And one of the ways that we can begin to do that is by employing some of the more states of grace, where we can begin to take a step back and look at things from a broader perspective, and also to be able to set the conflicts aside, not that we're immediately dissolving or turning away from, we're just putting it on the shelf for a moment so that we can engage in self-sustaining, human-based engagement with ourselves. And then out of that self-engagement, in which we bring a sense of compassion and humanity and forgiveness, affection, and love for our own self, it's healing for ourselves, but also it creates a platform through which we can be able to form a lens upon the world so that we can donate or give our energy, some portion of our energies, to that more humanistic approach. So for some people, that might look like prayer. For other people, that might look like affirmations. For other people, that might look like meditation. It can come in the form of sort of a message in a bottle. Energy travels, just like we absorb the energies of that are toxic from a toxic expression or from an event that is horrifying to us. That energy resonates through our body and has an impact, not just in what our response time might be, what our responses are, but how we feel in our body, how we begin to develop that sense of suspicion and anger and judgment. So we're being impacted by all these inputs in this way. So what I'm speaking of is to create a platform from which we can generate a response that is more humanistic, generate a response that will be able to put energies into the field that can impact other people, but in more constructive ways. I won't say necessarily positive or negative, because you never know how people are going to receive. But the idea is to come authentically from ourselves, bringing forth not just ideology, but real energetics behind the words, so that if we want to bring more of the energy of compassion, we would start by bringing that sense of compassion to ourselves. You know, we've all had our life struggles. We've all had our life tragedies. We've all had our life disappointments. And though, for the most part, you know, we keep trucking along and we keep doing what we do and working to move from survival to thriving. But in order to do that, we have to not be judging ourselves and just be compassionate with ourselves, be compassionate with the way we might have thought in the past, and say, you know, we only know what we know. Let's not be so angry, excuse me, at ourselves for a particular ideology or thought process or allegiance to a particular group or party or religion or political system, but get underneath that and say, and just be compassionate for that part of you that is seeking that information, that knowledge, that understanding that's going to help to bring about the world that all of humanity can thrive within. And sink into that cause that most people bring to their lives and to the table, to try to bring kindness, to say a kind word, to forgive those people who have crossed your path and done things that you experienced as wrong, wrongfully brought against you. And then, you know, looking at the things that we wrongfully, the beliefs that we wrongfully hold about ourselves, and just strip down and strip down to that core human being that we were when we still had some innocence and still believed in, you know, getting out into the world and creating and doing great things and collaborating on making the world just a viable and loving place. Most of us at some point actually believed that to be the case. Not sure so much now, because the level of conflict has risen exponentially around us. But we still need to be rooted in that space of innocence, where as a child we could look at another child and not see the differences, but just see the same energy of play and excitement in that other child. So the reason we want to root ourselves back into that time, which exists still exists within us is to be able to reground into that. While it may have been magical thinking, it's an energy of optimism and an energy of possibilities and potential. And as we remember ourselves of being in that state of almost pure potential, growing up into the world, not knowing where we would be, all of the dispersions and conflicts and troubles tend to shut that part of ourselves down. And it's the shutting of it down that allows us to seep into that drone-like state where we're just moving according to the status quo, trying to, you know, hanging on with fingernails, trying to keep life alive even. And that's what happens is that we, in this larger milieu of violence and toxic behavior, it's very easy to get pulled into that behavior. And rooting back into our innocence pulls the energy out. It's not that it's not there, and it's not that it won't exist for you, but it's in order not to live in that space. So as we pull back into our innocence, energetically in the body, that would be in the region of your navel. So in the navel is a point, you know, it's related to the chakra system or to the system of Qigong, which is elixir fields, dantians rather than chakras. But that would be generally located where you can connect with your innocence. And as you connect with your innocence, then as you reapproach the stage, you can reapproach it with a fresh eye and with a sense of replenishment and with a sense of having a greater vision for what's possible. And why I'm recommending that we go and take this into a more reflective expression, a reflection through energy, through meditation, through mantras, through bringing forth that kind of innocent possibility, that innocence that allows anything to become possible, is that that's the energy that needs to permeate into our greater field, which means, for instance, I might be sitting at a table with a member of my family or a friend who has an opposing view and is very much engaged in argumentative behavior for that view. And so it becomes a little bit more like, the conversation becomes more like a chess game or checkers, you know, who's on top, you know, who makes the most points. And it can generally lead to feelings of hostility. And this is how very often over many of these political issues, we end up becoming estranged from family and friends. So what I'm speaking of, not that that engagement wouldn't be taking place, but when we can maintain that connection to the innocence within us, we can make connection to our core, real connection feeling for these people in our lives. And I'm starting close. So it could be sitting with a person, but rather than engaging in the parrying back and forth, I am engaging in that childlike quality of, actually, I remember you. I remember our childhood friendship, or our college friendship, or our friendship at work, or, you know, even the little pleasantries and the niceties. I'm not going to forget that. That is who I'm speaking to. And then when you begin to engage in a conversation, even though it may be one of conflict and of ideas or beliefs, you can maintain through that conversation a sense of value for that human being. And we can do it more readily with people that we know, because we have a history with. And not forget that, you know, this is somebody who at some point has had meaning in my life, and I choose not to condemn this person or take away this meaning because I disagree with them now. So in my exchange, rather than be pulled into the energy of anger and the energy of condemnation, I will say my words with an energy of compassion, as if the unspoken part is, don't you remember who you are? Don't you remember who I am? And sort of keeping a place energetically in this discourse for the realization of who we truly are, that we are these innocent souls who came into this world and were however corrupted in whatever direction, but maintaining at the core of engagement that sense of sort of putting out the option for peace, holding that option for reconciliation, holding that option, allow that to come through in the engagement with whomever the adversary may be. And I'm not suggesting that this is kind of a pacifist approach, in the sense that there are some conflicts in which you must act. If I'm walking through the subway and somebody clobbers me, I got to defend myself. If I'm walking down the street and somebody is robbing me, it's a different mode. You know, it's an active defense mode. I mean, you'd still want to have that compassion, but it's a much more actively life and death defensive mode. But even in those situations, you can bring that compassion to it. So, by way of explanation, I try to approach all of relationships in that way, with the assumption of innocence at the core of the being. And I speak to homeless people this way and have conversations with people whom I may never see again, and just trying to hold that compassion, looking into their eyes, speaking with kindness on the briefest of ways. And what that does is it creates an environment within myself and around me that kind of holds that space, because energy is real. It's a substance that we can experience between each other. And so what that creates is a local environment around your body, around your being, that is going to move ahead of you. And as people move through your field, they're going to experience that energy of extending a hand, extending a kindness, extending an acceptance for whatever it is that this exchange may be. So it tends to temper the kind of engagements that are conflictual that you might have in your everyday experience. But it's also creating a field around you that has an impact locally around the people who are engaging with you. And the more you can substantiate this energy and allow it to be reflected traveling through your field, the greater influence you have in your local environment. And when collectively we put that together in our fields, connecting our mutual offering into the world of a remembrance of that core innocence that we all came into the world with, it helps to substantiate that force within the unified field. So while I can't say if how successful or if it's a slow or if it's a long process, but it's a process in which we individually transform our own energy fields, collectively transform our community energy fields, and coming together in communities, we can collectively transform the greater unified field in which all this toxic behavior lives and grows and thrives. So getting back to my story, I live in a building in Brooklyn, and there's always been a homeless issue in my neighborhood, like all of New York. But I've always engaged with conversations. You know, I buy people food when I can, if I have it. If not, I just give a kind word. And so there are certain kinds of relationships that are at least where the person is seeing you eye to eye, not as a potential victim or a potential threat. And as it happens, I engaged with the person who then was, nowadays they don't have individual superintendents because they would have to give them an apartment and they would be there 24/7, take care of emergencies, which to me was highly efficient. But nevertheless, the buildings don't do that much anymore. But there was a guy there, a very nice gentleman who had his own business and was taking care of the building. And there came at some point a clash between one of these homeless people who had made it into the building and was sleeping under the stairs and the superintendent who was responsible for the building. And they had a clash in the building, and it had fallen out into the courtyard, which is where I saw it. And I heard these voices rising up to my window. And I looked out to the window and I saw who it was. It was the superintendent and it was the homeless person. The homeless person was armed. He had a knife. And the superintendent was looking for a way to overcome this issue. And so it was a risk, I say, but I mean, I just went outside. I ran outside and stood between them. Not exactly between them, but distance enough to get back into the building. And I started talking to them. And I didn't so much talk to the superintendent, who I felt was going to try to clobber the guy. And so I engaged with the homeless guy, and I just started talking to him. And I was like, you know, I live here. We've talked. You know, I don't really want this here in this space. I don't want you to get hurt. I don't want him to get hurt. Could you just pack up and leave? And he did. He just took his stuff and left. And the superintendent just watched the whole thing and then went back into the house without an actual conflict. So that was a risky business. I could have got myself killed, I suppose. But I was in the moment. And it wasn't a situation that I could have engaged in if I hadn't had pre-cultivated a relationship of some kind with both of those people, and having that relationship cultivated out of this sense of innocence and compassion and recognition of who they were. So that when I arrived and started talking very calmly, it re-engaged that kind of innocence process. And in that environment, which had been built in a manner of speaking by all three people, the situation was able to resolve itself and move on. And I later spoke to the superintendent, and he was really quite grateful that I was able to engage, and he was quite shocked that I would engage or that anyone would engage. And then I saw the homeless person a month or so later, and he came back and said, you know, that moment changed my life in a way. And I recognized that I didn't have to live that way. And then he started embarking upon how to uplift his existence. So that's just, you know, a small encounter in which a risk was taken, but in which it had a resolution that was positive on both sides. And I've never really shared this story, but the reason I'm talking about it is because I wanted to illustrate the power of grounding oneself in that state of recognition of that innocent human soul that resides within every human being. Or I would say human earth-derived being, in the sense that I include animals and trees and all those things that are alive, in this energetic innocence that comes through the birth process into earth reality. It comes from pre-birth with us into earth reality, but we don't have systems set up to preserve and protect that. We have systems that are set up to separate us from that facet of our reality, and we have to take responsibility for rekindling it. And out of that rekindling, we can then extend that energy in our engagements with our families, with our opponents, and we can collectively send that message in a bottle and allowing it to collectively, through our efforts, permeate the field within which we exist, the field of our planet, really. And my goal, and I'm inspired by the persons who two people who are inspiring me to engage with this, and I'm hoping to work in partnership with them and with those of you that are interested in going forward with this little peace project. We'll be talking more about it over the airwaves, and I'm thinking we might set up some gatherings of some kind, probably on the internet in some fashion, where we can engage in some of these things, or perhaps, you know, we could pre-record some things and put them out there. But just to sort of rebuild the substance of that pure essence that we have within us. And as we sort through the self-criticism and the self-doubt and the self-recrimination, and begin to reconnect with that innocence. The innocence is not that it's an infant. It comes through with infancy. But the innocence is the core part of who we are that we can build into its adult strength. And when we build that into its adult strength, then we can acquire the skill set that we need to actually be spiritual warriors in the world. So it doesn't matter what the cause is. We're not fighting or working towards a cause or an outcome at our personal expense. And we can work in such a way that as we're inputting our actions and our ideas and our thoughts, we're inputting that information to each other and into the field with that energy of, I see the horrific things that are happening. I see the death and destruction. But on both sides, at the core of these beings, I recognize the innocence that's there. So it's not to slip into an eye for an eye or a tooth for it's about, let's correct our eyesight on both sides. Let's correct our inner corruption, which you could symbolize as tooth decay, on both sides. Let's come to understand what are the fears that are driving each perspective. What are the corruptions that are overtaking the different perspectives so that we can see where it can take us. And I feel confident that it will make a difference. I know that there are a lot of groups around the world who are doing things like this, and it may be a matter of tapping into and coordinating and pulling together these happenings around the world, these people who are in their hearts dedicated to bringing peace, compassion, and a world within which people can exist in joy and peace and safety wherever we happen to be residing on the planetary body. So it's sort of a background thing, in the sense that everybody's going to be doing what they're going to be doing, thinking what they're going to be thinking, and feeling what they're going to be feeling. But gradually to work together to bring ourselves back to core alignment, then rather than being stuck to some outside force that we have no way of knowing exactly, truly, what it represents. Because from the that I see, it's very hard to distinguish the whole truth. And it's very hard to face the extent of the corruption. And when I say corruption, I'm speaking of corruption in money, corruption in governments, but also the corruption in people's hearts and minds that are causing the allegiance to the cause of death and destruction. There's vast, vast corruption in the world, and we need to recognize it as something separate from whatever the particular narrative is. He said, she said, this side, that side, is not as important as recognizing the corrupt that's being presented on either or both sides of any particular issue, so that we're not led by the false narratives into becoming an operative for those narratives. Hard to avoid, but at least we want to at least see for ourselves what's happening and understand in this process of discernment that who we are apart from all the madness that we engage with in the world. So I'm not going directly into some of the processes, the meditations and stuff today, because I haven't had a chance to build that collaboration as of yet, but that's the goal, And I'm going to need for those of you who are listening to keep me on point, because I'm really good at getting distracted. And I've spoken up almost the whole hour. If you have a comment and you can be brief, we could probably get a few of you coming in. Our live program on WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM, WBAI. You can call in live on Friday mornings at 11 a.m. And the number to call is 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And the number, excuse me, you could also listen to this program. It's not live, generally speaking, over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, on Saturdays at 6 p.m. So we're close to the end of time, at least for this hour. I'm going to play a little bit of music. And if you can call within 4 minutes, we'll take your call.
Love is but the song we sing.
Smile on.